Good evening, and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, David Onick. Our topic this hour is healthcare reform in California. After much passionate debate and an historic Supreme Court decision, President Obama's federal healthcare reform is becoming a reality. States are required to fully implement the Affordable Care Act, called Obamacare by many, by January 1st, 2014. With this deadline in sight, the state of California, counties, employers, and health insurers are scrambling to adjust to the Affordable Care Act's new rules and regulations. And consumers are wondering just what this new system will mean for them. Is California ready for healthcare reform? What still needs to be done before January 1st? How will you be impacted? Joining me in studio tonight to discuss these issues is John Gergerina, Chief Executive Officer of the San Francisco Health Plan, which provides affordable health care coverage to 52,000 moderate to low-income San Franciscans. The San Francisco Health Plan administers Healthy San Francisco, Healthy Kids, Healthy Families, and Medi-Cal for the County of San Francisco. Welcome, John.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
We are also joined by phone by Jennifer Kent, a principal at Health Management Associates, where she provides strategic and technical support to clients around healthcare reform. Jennifer was previously associate director of the California Department of Healthcare Services, where she helped spearhead passage of the nation's first health benefit exchange under the Affordable Care Act. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And also joining us by phone is Mike Johnson, director of public policy for Blue Shield of California. Blue Shield is a not-for-profit California health plan with 3.3 million members. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation by calling 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us now at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com or post a comment on klw.org or on our Facebook page. Jennifer Kent, let's start with you. California, like all states, needs to fully implement the Affordable Care Act by January 1st. What is already in place in California regarding health care reform, and what still needs to be implemented by the January 1st deadline?
So when the Affordable Care Act was passed in 2010, California took some early initiatives to implement the act. The first was the enactment of the state's federal high-risk pool, and this was something that was designed to immediately help individuals who have pre-existing medical conditions, such as cancer, or if they have had some kind of chronic disease like diabetes or kidney failure or something in which medical insurance companies have been unwilling to give them coverage because they have something that is seen as an expensive condition. So the first thing California did was enact this federal temporary high-risk pool to give coverage to those individuals at rates that were somewhat affordable. They're still fairly expensive, but this is a temporary stopgap measure, and it's helped about 16 to 17,000 Californians to date. One of the second activities that California undertook was to conform a lot of its health plan laws in terms of how health plans are supposed to operate in California. So children are supposed to receive guaranteed issue. Any child that is trying to purchase coverage, obviously through their parents, health plans have to give coverage to that child regardless of what their medical condition is. And then lastly, one of the really large things that California did in 2010 was they created the health benefit exchange. So the first exchange in the country was done here in California. And so that has been constituted and has been basically racing to the finish line ever since.
Okay. And so California has been ahead of the game compared to a lot of states and made a lot of progress. But what still needs to happen before January 1st for California to be in full compliance?
Well, so one of the things about the Affordable Care Act and the Supreme Court decision was somewhat surprising to folks was when the Supreme Court decided that states had an option to decide whether to institute the Medicaid changes in the Affordable Care Act. That handed a decision back to states to make that decision for themselves instead of having to do it the way the Affordable Care Act was designed. States all of a sudden could decide whether or not they wanted to participate. And so you've seen a lot of talk amongst different states, both from Republicans and some Democrats, saying, well, if we do this, how much is it going to cost and what's it going to look like? California is in the midst of that discussion right now. So Governor Brown has put out a proposal in his January budget that says there's two ways to go about doing it. You can do it either through the state and essentially just expand the state's Medi-Cal program, or you can do it through the counties, of which there's 58 different county systems, and the state, you know, the counties could do that Medicaid expansion on a county-based level. And so that's a discussion that's currently going on, and that is a very significant policy debate, and there's a lot of cost considerations for the state and how that gets designed. And that's probably one of the biggest things that needs to be done between now and 2014.
And given that choice, which way is the governor leaning in terms of what he'd like to see?
I don't think it's clear. I think that his interest is in designing a Medicaid expansion that does not unnecessarily burden the state's general fund. We are coming out of a deep recession. California was, you know, severely impacted. At one point, the state's deficit was $60 billion with a B. And so I don't think that the governor is interested in doing anything in which he jeopardizes the state's fragile economic recovery. That being said, Medi-Cal is the second largest state expenditure behind education. And so it costs a lot of money, and it covers a lot of people. There's up to 8 million, you know, Californians on Medi-Cal today. And so that is a very robust program, and it does cost a lot of money. So anything that happens in terms of an expansion on Medi-Cal is going to have an impact on the general fund. And I think the governor has made it really clear that to the extent that those costs can be minimized, changed, or otherwise have funds redirected from other programs, that is something that he's very interested in seeing happen.
Won't the federal government be taking up the tab of Medi-Cal expansion, at least for the first couple of years?
Only for a certain population. So under the Affordable Care Act, there are what we refer to as medically indigent adults. And so these are adults who are not otherwise eligible for Medi-Cal today. You know, Medi-Cal today, in very simple terms, covers children, disabled, blind adults, and families that are have children that are Medicaid eligible. Under the Affordable Care Act, anyone below a certain income standard, which is 138% of the federal poverty level, is eligible for Medicaid, regardless of whether they have a disability or whether they have children. And so those new eligibles are what's covered at 100% federal funds for the first 3 years. Other individuals who are eligible today for Medicaid but are not enrolled, the state still has a 50-50 share with the federal government. So there are individuals that will come to Medi-Cal through just the natural outreach that's going to be happening under the Affordable Care Act, and the state will have to carry that cost. And so there are costs that will be generated just from that. And then you talk about providers, and John and Mike are certainly good about talking about this as well. Hospitals, doctors, everybody's working at a certain capacity, and in order to increase your capacity, you have to start paying providers more. And Medi-Cal is certainly no different. It has a fairly limited network, and if you're going to push up to a million more individuals into Medi-Cal on top of the 8 million that are there now, you're going to have to increase your provider capacity, which means you're going to have to pay. So that's a cost also that is not necessarily borne by the federal government.
Okay, let's go now to John Gergerina. San Francisco's own healthcare program, John, has been a huge success. It's really seen as a model nationwide. Can you describe what San Francisco's program is and tell us what will stay the same and what will change under the Affordable Care Act?
Sure. I think the first thing that's important to note is we're the San Francisco Health Plan, and we provide health insurance to low-income residents through Medicaid, through Healthy Families, and that's actual insurance. The program you're talking about is an incredibly innovative access program, which is referred to as Healthy San Francisco. Probably most of the listeners would recognize it if they've been into a restaurant in San Francisco. They've looked at the bottom of the bill, and it said, this is the Healthy San Francisco tax. What that program does is it tells uninsured residents in the city between the ages of 19 and 64, if you don't have coverage, come enroll in Healthy San Francisco. And here, it takes me a moment, but it sounds like talks like walks like insurance, but it has one major difference. So an individual who's uninsured and enrolls in Healthy San Francisco, and we do all the day-to-day activities for that, they receive a primary care physician, lab, x-rays, hospitalization. Here's the big difference. It's covered while they're in San Francisco. If they get up, go across the Bay Bridge, they go into Hayward, they use St. Rose Hospital as an emergency, they're not covered. And that's the major difference of Healthy San Francisco versus insurance. So Healthy San Francisco is an incredibly innovative access program, but not health insurance. And so as the healthcare reform comes into place, and with this expansion of Medi-Cal and with subsidies in the exchange, we and the Department of Public Health and all of those providers that participate and provide services to Healthy San Francisco folks are going to tell them, if you're eligible for Medi-Cal, we want you enrolled there. It's full insurance. If you're eligible for a subsidy, we want you to enroll there because it's full insurance. However, and this is where we're very fortunate in San Francisco, the mayor and board of supervisors, the health commission, the Department of Public Health are incredibly supportive of Healthy San Francisco, and it will continue because there are some populations who will not be eligible for the Medi-Cal expansion, nor be eligible to purchase in the exchange. So, for example, folks who are undocumented cannot even buy an exchange policy if they're willing to pay full price. So Healthy San Francisco will remain in place for those folks. And then the second thing that's important is for all those folks who've been on Healthy San Francisco, we heard Jennifer talk about that there very well may be access issues across the state, that once you add all these people to be able to be covered, that you've got to be able to have the providers to see them. Here in Healthy San Francisco, they are seeing providers today. So that network for ourselves that we are providing in Healthy San Francisco, be able to transition them over to those same providers on the Medi-Cal side, or hopefully if they are exchange eligible to see whatever commercial plans are participating in the exchange. And the thing that's important here is in San Francisco, we also have the Healthy Kids program, which covers uninsured children. So between Medi-Cal, what was the Healthy Families program, and then in San Francisco, a Healthy Kids program, we have universal coverage of all children here in San Francisco. And that was the impetus of Healthy San Francisco. Let's find the 19 to 64-year-olds who are uninsured, and then, of course, Medicare covers those over 65. So we have a wonderful opportunity that we're really excited about in San Francisco, and quite frankly, throughout the state, to be able to find those uninsured folks and get them enrolled into care.
Terrific. Now let's get the perspective of the health insurers. Mike Johnson, what is Blue Shield doing to prepare for the changes that are coming?
Well, for Blue Shield, the biggest changes, the changes that we're most focused on, are the changes that are going to happen in 2014, next year. And those are the changes in the way that insurance is bought and sold by individuals who purchase their own coverage. For people who get their insurance through work, the Affordable Care Act isn't going to make really major changes. People probably won't notice significant changes in the coverage that they get if they're getting it through work. But if people are buying coverage on their own, there will be huge changes come 2014. First of all, as Jennifer mentioned, people will be able to get coverage regardless of any pre-existing medical conditions. So insurance companies won't be able to turn them down on that basis. The products that will be available for people to buy will be standardized. The insurance exchange, this new state agency that Jennifer referenced, that has been established to create a kind of a new marketplace for health insurance products in the individual market to be bought and sold, has told the health plans that they're going to be specific product designs that the insurance companies are going to have to offer. So it'll be a lot easier for people to compare insurance products from different insurance companies. You'll know when you're looking at insurance at a particular level, say a gold plan, that you're looking at exactly the same policy. It covers exactly the same thing, whether it's offered by Blue Shield or Health Net or Anthem. So we're going to have to design new products for the health insurance exchange. We're going to have to redesign our systems so that we're covering all people regardless of medical condition. Under the new 2014 rules, we're also going to have to charge fairly level premiums to everybody. So regardless of your health status won't be something that we can take into account in the premiums that we charge you. The premiums that we charge you based on your age will still be a factor, but not nearly as much of a factor as they are today. So there are a lot of changes that will be coming for people who are buying coverage on their own.
And how will plans like Blue Shield differentiate themselves from other plans in this new exchange?
Well, they're going to have to differentiate themselves based on price. That'll be the main, most important differentiator, and on the quality of the coverage that you provide. You'll have to be providing a product with good service that generates very low levels of complaints. There'll be the insurance exchange in kind of when it presents insurance product choices to people, will provide people with lots of information about the quality of the health plan based on kind of independent sources, what they say about the quality of the different plans. There'll be information about the quality of the doctors that are covered by the different plans. So those, it's really going to get it, we're going to bring it back to basics so that what really matters in what makes an insurance company successful in this marketplace will be offering a lot of value, offering a product at a low price at high quality.
John, can you talk a little bit more about these exchanges? If you're a consumer on January 1st, or actually you can start signing up on October 1st of this year, how do you go about doing that?
Well, you have a variety of options. For some folks, they can just jump online to the Covered California website and be able to walk through a maze that puts in information about their age, their zip code, where they live, how many members are they looking to buy for, and then walk through what their options are, and they could just buy it on their own if they so desire.
And again, for our listeners, that website is Covered California.
CoveredCalifornia.org. For others, they may turn to an insurance agent or broker to help them. This is what happens in today's individual market quite often. Other folks will turn to community-based organizations or even providers. So, for example, in San Francisco, the Healthy San Francisco, many of the actual providers have an opportunity to help transition them from Healthy San Francisco into either Medi-Cal or to the exchange. So there'll be what's called by the law navigators. So folks will be out there actually assisting and helping folks. Because one of the things that you find out is for a lot of folks, this is incredibly complex. And to be able to have somebody who's sitting there with them, and if you will, kind of holding their hand and walking them through it, makes it so much easier. And particularly for folks who are looking for, where's the trusted place that I can go to? My community organization who knows me, particularly when you're talking about in order to get tax credits, you're sharing your own financial information about how much you make, whether it's on a monthly basis or an annual basis. So you really do want to be sitting with someone that you have trust in. And so there'll be a variety of options for folks to be able to get themselves enrolled. They'll be able to pick up the phone, and when Covered California is ready, they'll have a phone number to be able to call, and they could actually walk you over it on over the phone number. So
let me ask a question about those community-based organizations. Are they going to be receiving training on how to work this so that they can then work with the folks that they provide other kinds of services to every day?
Well, as you heard Jennifer talk earlier, Covered California is running at 100 miles an hour because
sure.
October 1st is almost here, and they will be putting training together for those folks as navigators. Also, in addition, at the San Francisco Health Plan, we actually train community-based organizations about Healthy San Francisco and Healthy Kids, so we'll be training them about the requirements of the new law, and there'll be a lot of other folks running around doing that as well, because we'll see a huge marketing campaign from California, Covered California, hearing about the new insurance law, about what's available to you, and then, quite frankly, we'll see what kind of message there is about that if you don't sign up on your tax return, you could face a penalty.
Right, and we're going to get into that in a moment. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KLW San Francisco, and on the web at klw.org. Tonight, we're discussing health care reform in California with our guests, John Gergarina, CEO of the San Francisco Health Plan, Jennifer Kent, Principal at Health Management Associates, and Mike Johnson, Director of Public Policy for Blue Shield of California. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You can also email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com or post a comment on our Facebook page or on our website, klw.org. Jennifer, I want to come back to you and follow up on something you touched on earlier regarding Medi-Cal expansion. You had said that there are currently 8 million Californians on Medi-Cal. What are kind of the low range and the high range of estimates of how many more Californians will be on Medi-Cal following the implementation of the Affordable Care Act?
Well, it's a little bit of a guessing game. So, you know, Medi-Cal is a very dynamic program, and what the state does twice a year is they put out something called the Medi-Cal estimate, and this is a very well, it's about as reasonable as you can get in terms of you have all these different people, all these different providers, all these different changes in what Medi-Cal provides in terms of healthcare benefits and different policy changes, and it's this big fat binder that gets issued in November and in May. The estimate is just what it means. It's an estimate. So at any given point, if the economy is really down in California, Medi-Cal goes up in, you know, in almost direct proportion to the economy going down just because people lose their jobs or their economic, you know, their economic circumstances change. Under the Affordable Care Act, there have been very reasonable estimates put on what they think happens in terms of how many people they think come in the door. But for purposes of what has been given to date, is it ranges anywhere from a low of about 500,000 to a million. But those, again, are just estimates because they're not quite sure what the behavior is going to be, if individuals will actually comply with the individual mandate of the Affordable Care Act. There is this assumption that people will take the penalty seriously and that there's also this social contract. So individuals all understand if they're paying into an insurance pool, regardless of whether they need the coverage or not, you are engaging in a socially contractual arrangement where you're helping someone else lower their costs at a time that you may not need the services. But ultimately, when you do need the services, there will be money there to pay your claims as well. We're not quite sure what happens with Medi-Cal because it's a no-cost program. So these individuals should go to Medi-Cal, but there are reasons that, you know, are beyond that for why individuals won't seek coverage. But
right.
The numbers that I have seen have ranged from low of 500,000 up to over just slightly over a million.
Now, for the portion that the state needs to pay, will there be savings in other places in healthcare reform that could possibly be moved over to meet that Medi-Cal burden?
Sure. The state has a lot of what we call either safety net programs or state-only programs. These have been programs that have been designed over a number of years to take care of very specific populations. So we have a state program called the Genetically Handicapped Persons Program. This is designed to help individuals with hemophilia and sickle cell disease primarily. These are extraordinarily high-cost medical conditions. There was an individual when I worked in the state who at one point on a single year used $17 million worth of blood factor. Blood factor is extremely expensive, obviously, and a regular health insurance plan would not want a person costing them $17 million a year. GHPP, that program exists specifically to help those kinds of individuals. It's very small, but it takes care of very extraordinary cases. The breast and cervical cancer treatment program is another state-only program for individuals who don't have coverage, but, you know, for women who have been found to have cancer of either the breast or the cervix. These state-only programs, by and large, should go away in 2014 because of the idea that individuals can get coverage either through Medi-Cal because of their income status or because they can, you know, they will receive coverage through a health insurance plan because they're required to offer them coverage. The only reason that these state-only programs will exist in any kind of significant force is because there's going to be individuals that will not be eligible for either the exchange or Medi-Cal. We call these the frictionally uninsured, or they're undocumented. So they are citizens of California in terms of their residence, but they don't have official immigration status. And so policymakers may trim these programs down to get some savings, but they may keep them in some kind of format in order to help those individuals who otherwise cannot get coverage in 2014.
Got it. And we will circle back to the undocumented issue in a moment. But, John, you wanted to get in here.
Yeah, I wanted to point out Jennifer made a good point, which is when you ask how many of these folks who are eligible for Medi-Cal will actually enroll, and we're not sure. But there's a couple of major changes that are happening, which I think is going to drive enrollment to Medi-Cal. The first is really the simplifying of the process. So, number one, what's been removed is what was formerly referred to as the asset test. Let's find out how many cars do you have? How many sewing machines do you have? How much money do you have in your account? These questions are no longer going to be asked. And part of it was not only to make sure that folks that had a lot of money didn't get in, but also, quite frankly, it was a hurdle to getting in. And so that hurdle's been removed. Secondly, there's what's referred to as the no wrong door approach. So it's not just that you have to go into the county welfare office to apply. Now you can go there if you like. You can also apply online. You can go to a navigator and have all that information then forwarded on to the county. So that, again, makes it easier. And then really it's all going to come down to what are folks' attitudes going to be when they find out we all have to have health insurance, and if we don't, we're going to be fined. And wait a minute, there's this program called Medi-Cal where I don't have to pay a premium on a monthly basis. I think the attitude about Medi-Cal is going to change over time.
Well, it'll be really interesting to see how that develops. We're going to go to the phones now. Again, you can join our conversation by calling 415-841-4134. Let's go to Lisa from Napa. Lisa, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I had a question about if you're in this plan, do you get dental?
Okay, that's a good question. John here looks like he can answer it.
Say for adults, the answer would be right now is no, although I believe Covered California is looking to add a dental plan, which you would pay at the full price. There are certain dental benefits for children that will be included in the health care package. But for just a straight purchasing dental, Covered California is looking to potentially add that where you would pay the full cost of that.
I see. And in terms of assets, so for the poverty level, they're just looking at your annual income.
That is correct. No more looking at assets. It's just purely your income, not only for eligibility for Medi-Cal, but also it determines if you're making too much for Medi-Cal, what subsidy is going to be available for you, or also referred to as tax credits, from the federal government, which says how much you have to pay for the insurance policy. That's also another critical part we haven't spent a lot of time tonight, is that in that exchange is the only place to get the subsidies from the federal government to make health care more affordable. In order for this entire thing to work, you heard Michael talk earlier that the health insurance companies now have guarantee issue. There's no more denying of people. But then that also means everybody needs to join, which is why the mandate was there. And then the third part is if you're going to tell people you have to buy and the insurance companies now have to cover them, it has to be affordable, which is where the tax credits are coming from.
And, Mike, what about Blue Shield? Will they cover dental?
Well, sure. Blue Shield, you know, offers dental along with as an additional benefit with its existing plans and will continue to do that. Yeah, absolutely.
Is there an extra cost for that, or will that be part of the general plan that people could sign up for?
It'll be at an additional cost.
Okay. Thanks. And, Mike, while I have you, I want to ask about quickly the coverage for children up to age 26, I think, has been one of the most popular aspects of the new reforms. So many families are so grateful for that. How has that affected Blue Shield and Blue Shield's bottom line?
Well, I mean, it is an additional kind of benefit that we're offering, to the extent that it has increased the cost of coverage by a small amount, and that has been built into the premiums that people are paying. So, Blue Shield is happy to provide whatever benefits the federal government or states want to require us to provide, but all of these benefits come at some additional cost. We think that was certainly worth doing, and the cost for that additional benefit has proven to be pretty small.
Okay. We're now going to go to an email from Chris in San Francisco, and Chris writes, "It seems impossible to find out how much things cost under our medical system. The same MRI may cost $500 in one location and $3,000 across the street. Does Obamacare allow us to get more information on this? And perhaps more importantly, does it motivate us to care about it and make more informed decisions? Who'd like to take the first crack at that?
I'd be happy to do that.
Great.
That's one of the things that the exchange wants to be sure that health plans, one of the services that they're providing to their members is to make that kind of information available to their members. I mean, Blue Shield currently tries to do this for our PPO members, to tell them how much it's going to cost them to get an MRI in one location versus another. I think the exchange is going to move to actually require that all of the health plans that participate in the exchange provide those kinds of cost comparisons to their members.
And Jennifer, what's your take on Chris's email?
Well, he sounds like someone that asks all the right questions, because I have asked those myself. I think that this is something that everybody struggles with, is how do you bring greater transparency to the healthcare system, in terms of having people that are purchasing it understand what the costs are that underlie those premiums. It's true, you can go to one place and it's $500, and you can go to another place and it's $3,000. I think the exchange, and there's lots of different provisions in the Affordable Care Act that are truly trying to help either make that information more available or package it in a way that it is understandable for the average consumer. We've tried to walk a fine line, you know, in the state when we do these kinds of policies of too much information, because it's certainly out there, but it's how you package it in a way that's meaningful, that it's delivered at the right time. Sometimes the right time to have a conversation about how much something costs is not when you are in the middle of a healthcare emergency. That's not the time to deliver it. But if you have the opportunity to have an elective surgery, and Mike, coming from Blue Shield, certainly knows this because they do a lot of work with the state. They did some very innovative programs this last few years about certain surgeries in which it's not an emergency, like a hip replacement. They will help those consumers understand that if you choose this hospital, it's going to be, you know, say a $2,000 deductible to you. If you go to this hospital that has perhaps worse outcomes but still costs more, you're going to have to pay more to go to that hospital if that's where you really want to go. And so it's an education process both by the health plans, the exchange is going to be making these efforts, and there's been some greater efforts on behalf of the Affordable Care Act to try to, in certain places, make sure that individuals are trying to make their choices based on quality, on cost, and understanding how those two are linked.
And John, you wanted to comment.
Yeah, I would just add that to the comments of Michael and to Jennifer is that we will see more of this, because as we look at the exchange is offering four different levels of benefits, what they call bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. And the bronze level is what's considered a 60% actuarial value. That means that the member, between the member's premiums and co-pays and co-insurance and deductibles, has to pay 40%. And that tax subsidy is tagged to the silver product, which is at 70%. So we're going to be seeing more individuals picking up more of the cost, which is in turn going to have them applying the pressure, which is what we're already seeing the exchange trying to answer, of what do these things cost? Because as members have these deductibles and coinsurance and out-of-pocket maximums that are $4,000 or $5,000 a year, the members want to make the best decision for them, not only financially, but we're also as good for their health.
Now, I want to turn back to something that's come up a couple of times, which is the issue of undocumented immigrants who are not covered under the Affordable Care Act and, of course, are very numerous in California. And if, like anyone else, are not given preventive care, will end up in our hospitals and costing us much more down the line. So, Jennifer, I would ask you, what can the state do for undocumented immigrants to keep health care costs down and make sure they have access to coverage? And then, John, I would ask you, what can San Francisco as a city do with its policies, since the federal government is saying this is not part of Obamacare? Jennifer, let's start with you.
Well, I think that's part of the conversation that's happening at the state level right now in terms of between the governor and the legislature and the various stakeholders about which way the state goes in terms of the Medi-Cal expansion. The counties have been extremely interested in having that conversation because they realize to the extent that there are undocumented individuals in each of their counties, they will continue to be needing health services. And if there's no adequate provision of preventive care for them, either through county clinics or federally qualified health centers or, you know, different types of, you know, hospital outpatient settings, that they will show up in an emergency room. And emergency rooms are where everyone goes in an emergency, and so you really want to try to keep those resources dedicated for what they were intended. I think the counties have been interested in keeping a portion of revenue that they have traditionally gotten from the state to run what's known as medically indigent programs down at the county-based level. I think the counties are interested in keeping a segment of that revenue, realizing that these undocumented individuals are going to continue to need services. And so that is part of the conversation that's happening at the state right now.
And John, what about San Francisco?
In San Francisco, the Healthy San Francisco program will continue, so it will remain available. What we would expect is today in Healthy San Francisco, there's another program called SF Path, which is for folks who were previously on Healthy San Francisco but are definitely going to become Medicaid eligible. Between those two, there's 59,000 San Franciscans who are enrolled. We expect that to come down because of those who will be eligible for Medi-Cal and those for the exchange, but we do expect some portion of them will be undocumented, and they will continue to have that program available, so San Francisco will continue to cover them.
Got it. And, Mike, what is Blue Shield's position on this?
Well, you know, Blue Shield doesn't currently cover, provide services for Medi-Cal. So, I mean, you know, Blue Shield doesn't have a specific position on this.
Okay, let's go back to the phones and to our email. Again, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KLW and on the web at klw.org. We're discussing health care reform in California with John Gergerina, CEO of the San Francisco Health Plan, Jennifer Kent, a principal at Health Management Associates, and Mike Johnson, Director of Public Policy for Blue Shield of California. You can call in and join us at 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. You can also post to klw.org or to our Facebook page. We're now going to go to an email from Carl in San Francisco. And Carl asks, are other states implementing the Affordable Care Act differently than California? Jennifer, why don't we start with you on that one?
Well, if you've seen the joke in our world is if you've seen one state Medicaid program, you've seen one state Medicaid program. So if you've seen one state implement health reform, you have seen just one state implement health reform. Utah, for example, is doing a very, very different health insurance exchange in that they have basically said they're interested in the small business side of the health exchange. And, you know, we didn't get into this detail, but there are really two exchanges in each state. There's an individual exchange for which we've been talking about tonight, but there's also a portion of the exchange called the SHOP exchange, and that is for small business owners and covering those employees in small business settings. Utah, for a lot of reasons, has said they're not interested in the individual exchange, and they're only interested in the SHOP. States like Nevada are setting up their health insurance exchange, but they are doing it in a far different way. They have not standardized benefits the way that California has, and they're probably not doing what's known as selective contracting in terms of the exchange in California is going to be choosing plans that they want to do business with and only offering those plans that they feel meet their kind of combination of value and quality and affordability. There's certain states and certain exchanges that are basically going to say, if you can meet the federal minimums, you can come on into our state and sell products on the exchange, and there's not going to be any kind of a real measured effect in terms of what's on the market. There's not going to be any effort to try to standardize. Then you have a lot of states that get a lot of news, right? Florida, Texas. A lot of the
often states with Republican governors.
Yeah, the quote-unquote red states. And they are really struggling right now because providers in their state, providers being hospitals, medical associations, are saying you have got to do this Affordable Care Act. You've got to expand Medicaid because we are being stuck with the cost of the uninsured. And so anything that draws more money into the system and covers more people, providers in those states, be it red or blue, are really agitating for that change. So I believe that ultimately, not right away, but over the course of several years, states are going to come in to the Affordable Care Act, and they're going to expand their Medicaid programs because the financial incentive is so great for them to do. So it may not be tomorrow, and it may not be January 2nd of 2014, but ultimately every state's going to be in the mix because they can't afford to sit on the sidelines.
John, I saw you're nodding your head. You agree with that?
Yeah, I think Jennifer's done a good job of describing their every state is different. I think there's another key thing that we're going to see, which is when the Affordable Care Act was passed, it gave each state the option. Would you like to run your own exchange, or do you want the federal government to run it, or should we do this together? And as Jennifer said, there are many states who are saying, we're going to leave that to the federal government. I think, just as Jennifer said, that there are states who've decided not to do, or they think right now they're not going to do the Medicaid expansion, that they'll change their mind. I would expect many states to change their mind and say, well, while those of us who are running the state may not like the health care reform, do we want the federal government running the exchange in our state for our citizens, or do we want to take control of our state's exchange? And I would expect that change to occur over time.
With so much variability among the 50 states as they implement, is there funding that is going to evaluate what's happening in every state so that we can know what's working and what's not, and states can look to replicate what's happening in the states that are working, or if something isn't working in a state, to get rid of it? Is there a sense of an evaluative background that's going to happen here going forward? Jennifer, could you weigh in on that?
I have a couple different thoughts. There are a number of reports that the Affordable Care Act requires the secretary, the Federal Health and Human Services Secretary, to perform over the life of the Affordable Care Act that are too numerous to even, I wouldn't be able to name them all myself. I think in each state, California is extraordinarily lucky in that we have significant private foundations that support health efforts at the state policy level. These foundations provide both technical assistance to the state on an ongoing basis, but they also do strong evaluation work. And so I have to imagine that that relationship and that history of those private dollars supporting efforts to kind of help policymakers understand the decisions that they've made and whether they've been good ones, bad ones, or whether they could use improvement will be, you know, ongoing, especially as things kick into gear in 2014. And we're going to want to know, you know, did people come to coverage? Did they like the coverage that they chose? Did they keep their coverage? Can they afford it? These are all going to be basic questions that people are going to want to know. And so both from a foundation standpoint as well as a federal standpoint, there's going to be a lot of different efforts to understand that. And then you have significant national foundations, you know, such as the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation or Urban Institute. They are very curious, and so they're going to be wanting to look at states on a state-by-state basis as well to understand what the impact has been.
And so California, as a model, it looks like at least California will have the resources to document what it's doing, and hopefully, if it works as we expect it to, can be a beacon for the rest of the country.
I think so. I think we are extraordinarily blessed with an abundance of those kinds of resources where other states are not. I mean, I wouldn't say that Oregon or Arizona or Nevada has nearly the foundation support that we do in California. So I think we definitely, and because we're so big, and we have a lot of kind of innovative programs that take effect here that others try to replicate, I think we will be a model for a lot of reasons.
And Mike, what is Blue Shield doing to track the changes and see what's working and what's not working for Blue Shield moving forward?
Well, you know, I think at the end of the day, what people are going to be looking at is the price of coverage, the ease of access to it. Are these exchanges working? I mean, are people can people easily navigate the choices? I mean, the kind of stuff that I think what's going to be really important is just the experiences that people have, what the media is saying about this. So right now, we're completely focused on doing everything we can to help Cover California, which is the, you know, California's exchange, be successful come open enrollment for 2014. And I think that the just the general customer experience that people have going through the exchange and the premiums for the coverage available through the exchange are really going to be what kind of makes or breaks it for people, and sort of people's sense of whether or not the ACA and Obamacare has been successful is to a large extent, I think, going to flow from that. So that's where our focus is right now.
Okay, let's go to another email. And with the few minutes we have left, if you'd like to email in a final question, you can do it at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, or you can call in at 415-841-4134. This email is from John in San Francisco, and he asked, does Obamacare address the problem that doctors can legally participate as owners of their own labs, x-ray clinics, etc., and thereby have an incentive to prescribe more procedures than might be otherwise advised? John, you want to jump in on that?
I'm unaware of any piece of the healthcare law that says that prevents them from that. However, I would say when you're looking at health insurance companies such as Mike's or Kaiser's or even the San Francisco Health Plan, we're looking to make sure that inappropriate things aren't being provided to the members. So, and this is one of the ways that the state and the federal government, particularly California, actually relies on Medicaid or Medi-Cal managed care plans to be able to manage, to focus on prevention, and to be able to prevent fraud that's happening, to be able to keep the costs down.
Jennifer?
There are a couple of provisions, and we call them innovations in the Affordable Care Act, such as the accountable care organizations, and there's these multi-payer initiatives where they are, the federal government, through Medicare, has said we're interested in understanding the link between provider behavior, provider prescribing, and understanding whether or not that is excessive or underutilized, because sometimes services are underutilized. So you want to incent providers to give more vaccines, right, and give more cancer screenings, but you don't want them to do maybe as much diagnostic work. And so I would say that some of the things like the accountable care organizations and the multi-payer initiatives are designed to kind of get around that, which is we want you to do the right thing in terms of prescribing the right services and do less of the wrong thing, which is over-prescribing of certain things that are unnecessary.
Here's another email that I think is typical of a question a lot of people have. Medicare, of course, is one of the most popular programs we have. And so we have Ken from Bolinas writing in to say, I'm a senior enrolled in Kaiser through Medicare. Will anything change for me? John.
I think it'll be very similar to what it was, with the addition of the help of the paying for some of the drug cost that the Affordable Care Act made changes to. So for some folks, and I think Jennifer touched on this earlier, if you're in a large employer and you're receiving employer-sponsored insurance, you're not going to see too much changes. If you're in Medicare, you're not going to see too much changes. If you are uninsured or you're self-employed or you're purchasing in the individual insurance market, that's when I think you'll see the changes.
Do you agree, Jennifer, that those on Medicare do not need to worry that there are going to be significant changes in the care if they're happy with their current care?
Yeah, no, I would very much agree with that. There's a huge section of the Affordable Care Act that touches on the Medicare program, but it's really not touching the benefits at all. But like as John said, they were making improvements to it. So they're either designing innovative types of things that I just talked about, like the accountable care organizations, or they really did try to close what we refer to as the donut hole. So they tried to narrow the amount of money that people had for out-of-pocket costs related to their drugs.
Now, let's turn back to something we touched on earlier, which is the individual mandate and the penalty that people could receive. And I'm sure some of our listeners are saying, what? I can be penalized? How much can I be penalized? What do I need to do to not be penalized? Jennifer, can you explain what that penalty is and how people can avoid that penalty?
Of course, I didn't brush up on my numbers before the call. But
Jennifer, I have the numbers if it'll be helpful. So let me run that, and then yes. Jennifer can walk through what folks can
Perfect.
Do.
Perfect.
Exactly.
So,
In 2014, if you haven't purchased insurance when it's time for your tax return, the penalty is either 1% of your income or $95, whichever is greater. The following year in 2015, it's 2% of your income or $325, whichever is greater. By the time we hit 2016, it's at 2.5% of your income or $695. And it's important to point, not only do you pay the penalty, but you haven't had insurance during the year.
Right. Jennifer, do you want to add anything to that?
No, thank God that John looked all that stuff up before.
Yeah, he's got the charts out in front of him.
I owe him, and I think he's the one that sent that, you know, John from San Francisco email to.
To himself. It could be. We'll have to look whose email address that actually came from. Speaking of email, let me go to another from... Oh, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to understand why we have this requirement in the law that everybody have insurance and why there are these penalties for it, because... everybody loves the provision in the law. It's probably one of the most popular provisions of all, that insurance companies have to accept people regardless of any pre-existing medical condition. But if you set up insurance that way so that insurance companies have to take everybody, you want to make sure that the insurance companies also have healthy enrollees so that the costs of the people with medical conditions get averaged out with the people who are healthier. If instead you're just enrolling relatively sick people, you can imagine how high the premiums would be. So it's very important that people who are healthy and who may think, I'm in great shape, I know I can get insurance whenever I need it because the insurance companies can't turn me down, I'll just wait until I get sick and then I'll get insurance. Well, if everybody kind of operated that way, insurance premiums would be through the roof. So it's critical that you get everybody into the insurance pool.
Yes, thank you for explaining that basic tenet of how insurance works, which I think is helpful to remind people and take a step back. So thank you for that. Let's go to the phones. We have Ed in Menlo Park. Ed?
Yes, good evening. I have Medicare insurance, and I'm wondering, is there part of the Covered California, is that going to be allow me to compare private Medigap insurance choices to each other? And because they do vary in price. So there's AARP has something, and then other, you know, vendors have their own. And is it going to provide something where you can compare all of those? I don't know how it reflects on the Part D for the drug insurance. Those also are a whole panoply of plans out there, and they're really hard to compare to each other and all that. And I'm wondering if it provides a uniform way to compare all of these.
Good question, Ed. John?
Ed, unfortunately, the answer would be no for now, although I think that there are many policymakers who are thinking if Covered California or the exchanges across the nation could do a really good job of putting this information available to purchase health insurance, the individual health insurance, and as Lisa from Napa had asked earlier, and put together dental information, why couldn't they also do disability insurance? Why couldn't they do the Medicare gap? Why couldn't they become that central place for all insurance? So that's not what's going to happen to start out, but I think there will be policymakers who will be looking that with a successful exchange, that might be a future option to be able to be discussed. Because as you've made a very good comment, the purpose of this Covered California is to be able to be a simple marketplace where you can make your choices and it's all available to make it easy to understand. And why can't we have that on the Medicare side as well?
Jennifer, is that something being discussed at the state level?
Not at this point, but I think that he raises a really good question in that you have people that are trying to purchase these Medicare plans, and so the CMS Medicare website tries to allow for people to shop and kind of compare plan against plan, but they have some fundamental flaws in it in that the benefits aren't standardized. So it's very hard to compare because you're having to flip between, you know, one plan or the next and say, ah, you cover dental, but you don't. And you have generic-only drugs, and I need a brand drug. And so they really require a level of sophistication that most people don't have. So the Medicare website tries to allow for a shop and compare, but they do, in my humble opinion, a fairly poor job. And that's partly because they've chosen not to standardize the benefits the way that the California Exchange has. And so John's right. It's not going to happen today, but should the exchange do a really stellar job in its, you know, first years of inception offering coverage, you know, more people are going to look and say, well, if you can do this well, we would expect you to do something else well, too. And so I could see Medicare quickly kind of becoming the next frontier of, you know, kind of standardized comparison for purposes of shopping.
And it sounds like California already has so much on its plate getting what it needs to get done that there'll be a number of things, I would imagine, that would be in the second round once the initial things have been implemented.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to one quick final email from Athos, who asks, in today's health insurance environment, providers choose whether or not they accept certain plans. Will providers continue to have the option of excluding people whose plan does not reimburse them at the level they demand? John, you want to give that one a shot?
Yes, they'll continue to have that option, but the difference here will be, and Mike could speak to this from Blue Shield's experience, the covered California could become very, very large. In fact, because as we had said earlier, it's the only place that you can receive the tax credit or subsidy for, and the tax credit goes all the way up to 400% of the federal poverty level. So for example, a family of four, 400% of the federal poverty level is $94,224 a year. That's well beyond median income. So everyone who wants to use that tax credit is going to go into the exchange. So if that provider says, you know, the reimbursement just isn't appropriate for me, they've lost out an entire segment of population that they're not going to have access to. So that's some of the leverage that a plan may have. Now, of course, you know, providers have their own leverage of if there's a whole block of them are saying they're not going to participate, then the plan might not be able to include them. But quite frankly, this exchange, and particularly the individual exchange, is all about getting the premium pricing as competitive as possible because the individual is paying for the full price. This is the most competitive priced market of all the insurance markets.
And just a final question. For an individual, how you mentioned the subsidies and the credits they can get. Is that going to be complicated for them? Because a lot of people may hear that and be like, that sounds great, but am I going to have to fill out all these tax forms? How am I going to know what I'm eligible for? How can I get educated about this to receive whatever subsidy I may be entitled to since the income levels are relatively high? How can our listeners find out about that?
That'll be available on both Covered California's website as well as through the help of agents, brokers, and navigators and assisters. And then, quite frankly, the initial of how much you're eligible for shouldn't be that difficult. A little bit of the complication comes when it's time to turn your taxes in for the following year because they'll be looking at your income in the entire year. So did it change over the year after you received that tax subsidy? And then there will have to be a reconciliation. So that will make it a little complex.
You know, but if you know your income, you can actually go to the Covered California website right now. They've got a calculator, and you can enter in your income information, just what your income was for the previous year and how big your household is, and it will tell you what your premiums will be for that silver level coverage.
Terrific. So, well, thanks for clarifying that, Mike. We are out of time. This has been a wonderful discussion. I really want to thank our guests, Jennifer Kent, John Gergerina, and Mike Johnson. Thank you all very much for a lively discussion. You can join us next week when we'll be discussing urban etiquette. For a link to this and other City Vision shows and to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, you can visit the City Visions page on KLW.org. Our engineer this evening was Eric Jansen. Tonight's show was produced by Wendy Holcomb. City Vision's senior producer is Susie Britton. This is David Onick. Thanks for listening to City Visions on KLW, your local public radio station. Good night and have a great week.